Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down, really. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
Gauntlet, the new fantasy adventure from Atari Games. The most fun a quarter can buy.
Wow. They've never had one of those shaky beds at the hotels.
No, they don't know. They don't know what's up. Greetings and welcome to Play Retro. Today is Thursday, December 22nd. This is Play Retro episode 48. I'm Scott Johnson, your host. And Valkyrie needs food badly. She's always talking about how she needs food badly. I think Valkyrie might have an overeating problem. We shall hold an intervention for Valkyrie. She needs friends badly.
Poor Valkyrie. She just, she's just hungry. She's always starving herself. She's got to fit into that little outfit.
Understand. The 70s were hard on her. I agree.
And it was tough. It was a tough time. And so, hey, and I'm your other host, Brian Dunaway, and I just shot a hot plate of roast beef, and now the DM is complaining that the warrior needed it badly. Mm. Too bad, chump. Should have had been faster. Insert coin now to continue.
Yep.
Click, click,
bling,
click,
bling, bling, more bling, bling, bling. The most valuable thing you can do with your quarter, according to that commercial.
Absolutely. I mean, because when you play Gauntlet at the arcade, you drop it in. That's 700 seconds. And if you've ever played Gauntlet, it counts down slowly. 1 second equals one minus health.
Yeah.
That means you get 700 seconds.
Yep.
What's that? Almost less like 11 minutes, right? Something like that.
Something close like that.
Yeah.
I think that's close.
If you didn't get hit.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's somewhat annoying, to be honest. I will say this. The most annoying thing was trying to find a commercial audio for the original game. That was almost impossible.
Yeah, because it was originally released arcade, and we didn't see it until a couple years later when it hit the consoles. And I don't think it had as much success there as it did the arcade.
No, I mean, I think people have a lot of fond feelings for it from its arcade days, but I think the home stuff.
Did you ever play the NES version? We're going to talk about that too.
I did. I played that one. Yeah. I played almost every version ever, including the kind of semi newish modern one that came out in like 2014 or something. It wasn't very good. It was okay.
It was all right.
It was all right. But the legacy.
I didn't need it badly or anything.
No. But the legacy it left behind, absolutely crucial because so much of the games I enjoy now have some direct lineage to Gauntlet in many ways, which we'll talk about here in a bit.
Dungeon crawlers.
Before we do, just a little interesting note with a bit of a twist. I got my Steam Deck back after I sent it out for repair.
Wow, that was fast.
That's
only been like two or three episodes, right?
Yeah, no, it wasn't even that. It was just, I think last week I had just sent it. And I thought, well, I'm never going to get this before Christmas, so whatever. I kind of resolved myself to get it after the first of the year. And they got it, and I got a notice yesterday in the morning saying, hey, your Steam Deck shipped. I'm like, oh, sweet. They've already fixed it. It probably still won't get here till after Christmas and maybe between this and New Year's. That's fine. And then about 2 hours later, it's at my door.
Oh,
and I went,
that is wild. I'm curious. Where is that? Where's the facility? Is it like up the street or something?
Turns out right here in downtown Salt Lake City is the repair center they use to do all their fixes in the States.
What?
No idea. If I'd have known that, I'd have just driven down there and said, hey, freaking here you go, and do it the same day or something, you know?
Oh, I'm sure they would love that.
Yeah,
they'd love knocking on the door. Hey, fellas, looking in, got your hands cupped around the window. Hey, I need some gaming in here. Help.
Hey fellas. Let me in, please. But yeah, it was great, and I'm really appreciative of their insane service on this thing. That was really quick, and they replaced both sticks. I guess they do that.
Did they leave all your stuff on it? Is it the original machine you sent in?
I know it's the original machine because there's a little tick mark on the back that I made with a Sharpie. So me and Carter didn't get ours mixed up. And we did this with switches too. And it's imperceivable unless you know it's there. You just go look at it real tight and there's a little tiny Sharpie mark. So it is the same machine, but you clear it before you send it to them. So all my stuff got wiped before I sent it.
Okay, true.
So all my emulation crap, I got to do that all over again. I haven't had time to do it yet.
But luckily, it's all automated in the latest version of the Emu Deck, which you can use for the Steam Deck to install every freaking thing if you want to. You don't have to.
Super easy, though.
It's pretty quick. Yeah, it's pretty quick and easy. It's not bad.
I just got to fire it up. Plus, there's a Steam Deck update today that changed a bunch of stuff, including desktop modes. Something's easier or better in there. Some massive update, so I got to check that out later. Anyway, that's what I've been doing, waiting for that damn thing, and it showed up, and thankfully it was fixed right here in town.
Was it free?
It was free. They didn't charge me a dime. Isn't that nice? Even though I think what happened to the stick was my fault. I know it was my fault. It fell off the edge of the bed.
Well, if you stop trying to pop those soda pop tops off with that thing, it's not what it's made for.
Here's what I think. So, chat room, for those asking, here's what I think happened. Here's what I know happened. It fell off the bed. And one of the sticks got caught on the bed bars, underneath the things that hold your bed, your box spring, caught the analog stick on that. Those things are heavy. It fell a ways because we got a tall bed and it went horink and horked that thing up. Now, here's the deal. Why they fixed it and kept it under warranty and said no problem, I think has to do entirely with the fact that I have 2,000 Steam games. And they were like, this is a whale. We do not upset our whales. Here's how we do it. We fix this stick. Yeah.
This one's a noisy whale, too. We've seen him on Twitter. Yeah. Oh, God.
This is a guy.
He's a noisy, noisy whale.
He won't shut up. He's a whale that won't quit singing. I really do think they were like, oh, that's a lot of games. He's sort of paid for this already. Let's go ahead and give it to him. So that felt good.
I think also, I also think that, I don't know this for a fact, but Steam as a company seems to be pretty proactive of making sure that service availability is one of their most important things. Yeah. And I think they probably got a lot of tech sitting around going, I wonder when people are going to start breaking it. Here comes the first one. We got something to do now. Fired up, boys.
They did, sadly. So my daughter dropped hers in Iceland and it hit the cement and shattered the screen. So her LED or LCD screen is dead. Yeah. And, it's all gibber. You know, when you smash the TV and you see it get all those lines and craziness, that's what she's got. And so I said, well, you know what? It won't hurt. Reach out to him and just say, here's what I did.
The whale's daughter's calling.
The whale's daughter's on the phone. And they said, nope, sorry, that one's not covered. So she's going to end up, shelling out $100 or something to fix that screen. But
that's not bad. I'm not surprised that the screens are not going to be covered. That was probably pretty early on. They're probably like, we can't cover screens. That's probably a large portion of the cost of this thing. I don't know. Maybe not, but I wouldn't think sticks would be too bad.
It wasn't.
They seem to be pretty smart.
It wasn't too bad. And they're smart. And they also, I think they lean on the side of, they want Steam Deck to not have any weirdness. They want this to be a positive launch, which it is so far. It sold really well. People picked it as hardware of the year. Everyone really loves their Steam Decks. I love mine. Like, there's no reason for them. And so for them to drop the ball on the service end would have been a big mistake. Yeah. I feel like, and this is my only experience, so I can't speak for everybody, but I feel like this bodes well for their support of the thing,
Long term. And I this thing. I mean, people complain and go, oh, I ain't paying $500 for no Steam Deck.
$500.
That's too much. But when you look at it, the technology they shoved into this thing, they're not making any money off these things, all right? They're making money just like the printer companies do. They put a printer in your hands and go, buy my product, and they sell you a bunch of ink. And that's, this buy is just another product way for them to. Yep. They're just another way to keep you in their economy and out of the Switch economy. That's all they're really doing.
He's that guy. Do you remember the guy that used to sell, lesson manuals on how to use Excel and Word and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the end of his commercial, he'd always go, "Buy my product."
I love that guy.
Buy my product. I love that guy.
Bob, would you please, please? I gotta feed my children. Please buy my product.
I don't know if he's still around. What was he called? The software.
Yeah, something like that. The
Was it the doctor's?
I don't remember. He was something like that.
Someone out there, look, chat room, your job right now is to find that guy and send me a commercial link so I can cap that later.
Ooh, yes, so we can play the commercial on stream. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I want to hear that dude because he was amazing. All right, Brian, you've been doing a bunch of 3D printing for your retro crap. How many controller holders do we have now? What are you doing?
Okay, so what we did, so a couple weeks ago, we talked about how I accidentally ordered a 3D printer and just leaned into it and said, all right, fine. And then I finally got a chance to put it together this past weekend. And so now I can finally present to you my first successful 3D print controller I made for my GameCube. I did just with the black filament, and it is quite handy. I like it. It's fairly light but pretty strong and sturdy. If you turn it around, you'll notice I've got a cable wrapped back there, so I don't no longer have to wrap my cables around my controller. It's even got a plug hole, Scott, yep, to plug that into so that I can keep that from being pulled on. And I think it's a pretty fantastic build.
You're just going to park it there? You're not going to be pulling it off there a lot. It's just kind of its new home, right?
Right, because I have like about 6 GameCube controllers. And most of them are going to be sitting on like little decks like this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one's probably going to get a lot of use. One's probably going to be hooked up directly to the console. And maybe I'll find a different, support for it. There's a whole bunch of wall mountains I've seen. But these are mostly for display purposes. And if somebody does come over occasionally, I don't mind unwrapping it and doing it like that. But for the most part, they're in storage. Now, the next thing I also printed, one more thing I'm going to show you before we move on. But I printed this little... Hey, remember these little boxes?
Oh,
these
little question boxes? Mario boxes. You jump on bonk
Mario
your head.
Boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, all I had was just black and white filament, so I just printed this out with white filament. I want to go back and print another one out with black and do use it has like these question marks you can glue on the outside of it and make that. But what is the box, you say? Well, inside the box is a storage place for your Switch cards.
Yep.
All your little Switch cartridges, which I have a few of. Yeah. It's got memory slots too. So you can put your little SD or micro SD cards over there. Nice little quick build, tight, very nice build. These are all things that I found off what's called Thingiverse. Those models were all free to download. And I printed them, and usually most of them took overnight, fairly simple and easy builds. And already I think this thing, I paid $275 for the printer with the filament and everything.
Yeah.
And I've already printed out things I was going to order off Etsy. I probably would have spent at least $30 just on those two things alone.
Nice.
And I haven't even used hardly any of my filament. So I'm going to, for me, it was a good purchase, and I can just,
It's already got its value out of it. All gravy from here on out, Brian. So print me a bunch of shit. That's what I want.
Yes, it's going to keep on being the gravy. So 3D printing is my new thing, retro 3D printing. That's what I ordered for, was to do all this retro 3D printing. Now, occasionally I do make little fidgety gadget things that I showed Scott earlier. This is a Flexi Rex. That's just for funsies while I'm waiting for my games to load.
Yeah.
Or some other things. But this is a retro 3D printer, man. I'm not worried. I haven't really thought much about figurines or anything yet, but it's mostly just going to be, I'm going to probably show you every week and be like, look at this thing. I got a PS5 controller, which is not retro, but I made a little thing for it.
And now
it looks retro. It looks like this.
Do it. Hold your little T-Rex up to the screen.
This is the Flexi Rex.
Get him up close. I want to see look at that. Sexy you guys, Rex. It's all articulated and stuff.
Yeah, look at that. Yeah. This thing blew my mind. The first thing I printed was this little box, and I was like, oh, cool, this little box is supposed to be a little test print. I'll print that thing out. And I picked the box up and had like a line on it. I'm like, what is that line? And I was like, almost like it opens up or something. And sure enough, it opens up, and I'm like, how did it just print a hinge inside place?
Yeah.
This thing is magic.
Yeah.
But is it devil magic?
It's up. No.
Is it sorcerer devil magic or is it wizard gauntlet magic?
Well, since none of it's real, I'm going to call it it's technological magic,
It is.
Nothing wrong with that. Magic. You got some sweet mana waves heading into your house and you're printing cool shit. That's all you can ask for.
And I spent another $175 because this past week, not is retro related.
Okay.
It's also partially part of my 3D prints. A guy came out on YouTube. I can't remember his name right now, but you remember Andreas by Andreas?
Yeah,
remember,
yeah.
Our great. Friend, great in the community, sent me a link to it. I got a little bit scared that this new project that he came up with was going to have parts sold out quickly. So I ordered all these things. It's called the Game Boy Interceptor. It's a Game Boy capture cartridge. And you put it between your physical Game Boy and your Game Boy cartridge. And it captures your input and it captures the data going to the card. And it sends that through USB to your PC where you will see the game in emulation and can control it. So you can control it and play it on this Game Boy while at the same time capturing it on screen. So look forward to that because I'm going to use that to play some of those old Pokemon games that was sent not too long ago by Eric. So a lot of retro gaming this next year in 2023 coming up, my friend.
Quick note that you reminded me of this. Pokemon pinball that was on the Game Boy and the NES had a game. Anyway, maybe it was just Game Boy. But they made another one for the Game Boy Advance. That's my favorite. Love that game.
Ooh.
And I've talked about it here on the show. Somebody uncovered in one of these Nintendo leaks that there was a DS game that was almost done, and it was being done by the people who did the Metroid pinball game, which was also excellent.
Oh.
And it was almost done, and they didn't do it. And we may never see another Pokemon pinball again.
What?
I know.
No, then I'll just have to make my own.
They don't see it as valuable. All they want to do now is make proper Pokemon bullshit. They don't want to make a cool thing anymore. I understand Pokemon Company and Nintendo. I get it. But maybe just throw me a bone. All right?
Yeah, just throw me a bone, man. We just want a bone. That's all we want. We just want a flexible Rex bone.
Just a bone.
That's all.
Give me your bone.
We'll 3D print our own. We don't need you, Nintendo.
Yeah, I'm not even asking for that much. I just want your bone.
I just want your bone, Nintendo.
I just want your bone. That's all I want. All right, you guys. It's time for us to dive into this week's big game discussion.
Shall we play a game?
We shall indeed. See if this sounds familiar to you.
Try this level now.
Oh, try this level.
Oh, God, that is so sexy. There's nothing better than Gauntlet voice synthesizer.
Yep.
That is the sexiest thing ever.
It's amazing. Here's another one.
You have found my treasure.
Oh, you have found my treasure. Except they say
you
treasure.
You have found my treasure.
Even our email has that.
Welcome to the treasure room.
When we get to emails, that's what that's from. So
that fascinates me because in addition to learning more about Gauntlet, the gameplay and development, I also kind of dug into the story, and it always kind of mystified me. Who is the voice? Is he the dungeon master? Is he the big bad sorcerer that put you in this or attracted you to the gauntlet because you're trying to find the orb in this gauntlet, according to the story, which you never get to because you just pew pew and go. It's hack and slash all the way through and pew pew. And so I'm curious who the voice is now. Did the developers even know who the voice was?
I don't know.
Just think that sounds clever.
I tried to find out. It may be completely artificially created, but there are some sounds in the voice that actually made me wonder. So here's a little taste of that because I think one of the game's greatest legacies is audio. Funny enough, and this is an audio podcast for most of our listeners, so I'm going to play a little bit of this. Check it out. I mean, there's an arcade in this mall, and I'm going in there because this is playing. And this would play ahead of you getting in. You know, this was like the attract mode.
Yeah, yeah. This is, hey, come over and look at May for a minute.
Yep, and then this
treasure,
stuff.
100 points. Save potions for later use. Save keys to open doors.
Woo!
Woo! This was the last one.
Welcome, warrior wizard.
Wizard. I would like to be a warrior wizard.
Yep. And you know what I really always liked was this sound. That was going down the hole.
Yeah, I like going down the exit hole that takes you to the next level. And I also love the coin drop. Just sounds so good. And also brings a little bit of shame to myself, too, because there's only a couple ways to recover health because your health is constantly going down, like we said, 1 second at a time, one tick at a time. Or if you run into bad guys, it takes a big jump and hit there. And the only way to restore it is either through needing food badly, picking it up, or dropping that coin. That coin was kind of a pay to play because it was a rolling play, right? Yep. That's what this thing, they took the get my quarter, get my token to the next level Atari did here with this rolling play where anyone could start. If you leave, someone else could come in, drop coin, and keep playing. You could keep just dropping coin all day seamlessly. It was just a coin sucker.
It was a coin sucker. It was designed to be one. You want to go as far as you could, and it really wanted to eat your money. That was just the
deal. But the thing is, you felt like it was a good value. At least I did when I would play Gauntlet, because when I was playing other games, a lot of other games were like, here's my quarter, 15, 20 seconds of play, I'm dead. Here, I would play longer, and it would draw me in, and I would end up spending more money here, whereas I would just walk away from another because I'm like, obvious money grab.
Yeah.
Here is kind of like boiling you slowly, like, you know, that frog in a pot. Yeah. And it's like, oh, I just spent all my money at Gauntlet. How'd that happen?
Yeah. I kind of hated that. Now, I can tell you from experience, we had a Gauntlet machine growing up, and there was a dip switch in that thing on the board that you could flip to make it so your health did not tick down. You would only lose health if you got hit by dudes. That was often true, though. The games would have... not difficulty settings necessarily, but arcade dip switches would control, like, you know, how many points to get an extra life. You could make that really hard or much simpler, that sort of thing. And in this particular case, you could shut off that timer thing, that loss of life that would just tick down. And that was great.
None of the arcade owners I went to must have thought that was a good idea.
No, it was not a good idea, except we had it in the house, and so that's what we always did. We always got in there and hacked around a little bit. But yeah, in an arcade, that's how they get your money, man.
Yeah.
Like even though I was telling you about the one in Vegas, that one we went to last year for the TMS event, they had all these arcade games. It was great. All these classic games, including Gauntlet. And all of them had their dip switches turned so that everything was as hard as it could be. Like the hardest levels of everything. Miss Pac-Man would start and it felt like you were 8 levels in. It was insane.
Right.
And they didn't charge you for any of those arcade machines. They were all free to play. But that's how they justified it, is like, well, if we're going to make them free to play, we want them to be playing the game, but then hurry up and get out of here and drink more. So that's where we're really going to make our money. And then you won't be in this game very long because it's been tuned to kill you. It's just a same thing, different problem, right? Like, it's just a weird thing that arcades used to do. It is a good reminder once in a while that arcades are just there to get your cash. That was it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they were doing it. This game, it was such a good trade-off because I felt rewarded, but man, they were really figuring it out here. At least I don't know how they could replicate this again in other games. And they did some games, but they didn't seem to pursue it too much further after this. But I mean, think about it. You got 4 players in a spot for usually like 2 players. So and it encourages people to come up and just drop in the whole time. So, man, I mean, it is just a coin taker back to back to back. No lines, no waiting.
I remember being pissed when some stranger would join and he'd grab the food before me. Freaking
that's
jerk.
That's what's great about Gauntlet as well. It brought that multiplayer aspect of, you know, do you play together? Or is this mofo fistin' to steal all the food?
Yeah.
He's a turd. He's going to steal the food.
Strongest remains kind of situation going on.
Yeah.
I sure played a lot of it, though. Didn't let it stop me. I did want to share with you a very awkward commercial I found for the Genesis version. The N64 version of, what was that called?
Gauntlet.
Legends? Was it Legends, I'm thinking?
Legends. Yes. Legends.
Arcade, N64, PSX, and Dreamcast. This was a game that had... like Dark Legacy, which came out later, it just looked like bad voodoo graphics. It was pretty bad. But anyway, there's a commercial for it, and I need to play it because it's, I don't know, I found it kind of alarming. So here it is. Enjoy.
You think I'm pretty? I am not. I am? Well, like on a scale of 1 to 10, how pretty do you think I am? 92? Oh, come on, you're embarrassing me. Hold on, I got another call. Hello?
Some things are just better to do with other people. Like Gauntlet Legends, where the more people you get to play, the more chance you stand to survive.
I've been voted prettiest girl in America? I have not.
It's so bad. It was this girl, just a little homely, you know, on her phone talking to nobody like a psychopath, telling her how pretty she is. She's not even trying to fake it to anybody. She's faking it to herself.
We were so brutal to each other during the 90s, man. I love that commercial. It was so this is terrible. It's terrible.
It is terrible. But I also kind of love that. I kind of love that it exists.
I love it. Because you know what? It did play. As long as you kept it playful, we all understood how it was to feel awkward. And that's what really people were, you know, really kind of targeting here is those who would prefer to be playing video games than talking to people.
But to pretty girls, yeah.
Talking to pretty girls.
Yeah, it's all dumb. I did do this as well. Before we get to the history of the game, I want to play this. This is just a bunch of sound from the game with the voice specifically. And tell me if you can tell when it gets to the part where I can tell a human was sampled for this, okay?
Okay.
Because I'm pretty sure it was, and it wasn't just computer generated. And you'll know it when we get there, right? So here they are.
Let's see you get out of here. Good cooperation. I've not seen such bravery. That was a heroic effort. Someone shot the food.
You can't catch me. You can't catch me.
It just goes on like that for hours.
Oh my God. Who recorded that? That was fantastic.
But you know, the minute he starts going, or whatever, it's like, that's not a computer. Some dude did that and they digitized it.
Yeah. But that's pretty good. I liked it. I'm sure that they used a voice model to synthesize this stuff at some point. I didn't dive deep into the voice synthesis, even though I probably should have. But I figure people knew more about that than maybe some of the other aspects of the game.
Yeah, entirely.
But there's like whatever 200 phrases or something, or
it's a ton. It's so much of it. I had to cut it way short because there was so much more that I could have captured. But
did you know?
Yeah,
there was all kinds of stuff that I didn't know about Gauntlet because I was just usually just in the arcade playing it moment to moment and not really paying attention to progression or anything like that. I didn't realize that when you played Gauntlet until I played it this past week, that it was the first 8 levels were always the same.
Yeah.
And there's two fast teleports at the beginning of the first level where you can choose to go straight to level 2 and work through the ones you know. Or if you've already been there, done that, you can pop over to level exit to 4.
Yep.
Or if you've been there and done that, you can pop all the way up to, I think, 7 and kind of continue on because everything after 8, I believe, is randomly shuffled. It's not randomly generated, but there, I think there's like 92 more levels and they can be distributed at any point. And, you know,
I think that was just like we talked about Berserk in a similar context. I think Berserk had, they weren't procedurally generated, but they would be randomly inserted if you got to a certain point. And it made it feel anyway like you were doing something new every time. Sure.
You weren't going to remember. You weren't going to remember 100 mazes at the arcade on this thing. And it would, I think they also did, I'm not sure if they did it in the first one. They definitely did in the second one. There was also rotation involved too. So all these mazes that you were working through, we're going to be doing that.
They'd mirror it like Mario Kart would mirror track. So you could basically have two versions of the track. And that, that worked pretty well. I do like, you know, the advent of modern techniques to make things generate randomly, I think is a very cool thing. And I think old games like this probably inspired that feeling of wanting to not do the same thing twice. Yeah. More depth, more unknown, which really worked on me. I have to admit, I didn't really, when I was playing in the arcade, I had no idea. I thought I was seeing new stuff around every corner. And so the illusion worked on me anyway.
Yeah. And I was always bad about, and I didn't understand this when I used to play at the arcade, I just assumed that you'd want to clear the first floor level. And so I would try to find keys. You'd find keys in the Gauntlet to open areas of the maze.
Yeah.
And I would just assume that I was supposed to kill everything on that level and then progress to the next level. So I'd always end up exiting straight away from level 1. So I don't even think I even played level 2 through 7 probably until later on when I was like, oh, this is how this works.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a moron.
Yeah, no. It's but how you're a kid, you know, you don't know.
Yeah, I'm a kid. What do I know? I didn't know nothing. All I know is this, is there's way too many of those bad guys coming at me. Way too many ghosts. Way too many demons. They're all sucking my health up.
Yep.
You got to kill those generators or they'll just keep coming.
Yeah, no, there's a pile of bones. You got to kill the pile of bones or else you're screwed. There's no real boss fights in this game. There'd be some stuff in not later games, but this concept of just never ending evil. Some people at home are going, "That sounds like Diablo." Well, I got good news for you.
Yeah,
Diablo doesn't exist without Gauntlet. Diablo is a direct descendant. It's a feisty grandkid, but a grandkid nonetheless. And I think all dungeon crawlers, really, even the most modern stuff today, owe just a little thanks to this somewhat repetitive but very influential dungeon
crawler. Now, it wasn't the first dungeon crawler, but it was the one that influenced the most people eventually. It was the first big hit. It was the first big dungeon crawler hit that really put it on the map. And everybody's like, "Oh, yeah, I'm going to play this." Because I think before Gauntlet was actually based on a Dandy, a game that was on the Atari 800, I believe, like the Atari PC, which had a lot of these same game elements. And they just ramped it up and put it in the arcade. And this is you can't deny the influence.
Oh, no, the influence is huge. To this day, I think there's things you could look at and go, "Oh, I'm playing Gauntlet." I'm playing glorified Gauntlet. Like you add a bunch of dressing to that, like loot and items and itemization and abilities. And really, what have you done? Well, you've just taken the Gauntlet formula and then just added a ton of depth to it, which, you know, obviously they're not going to do right out of the gate, but I respect it. I respect everything about the game except for those damn blinky purple ghost pieces of garbage. I hate them. They're one of my least favorite characters in all of classic or modern gaming. They can all eat a poo and die in their own filth. I hate them.
Right. I hate them so much. I don't know. I kind of hate sorcerers that teleport because of you'll have one that you just can't seem to locate and he'll just like keep popping up like boom, boom.
Yeah. They're the worst.
I hate that.
I do think as we're watching video of this, in fact, but I think that the best character in the game, the most effective character is the archer. What's the archer? What do they call him?
The elf. So we got you get to choose classes. You get four classes here. Classic D&D stuff. You get to play a warrior, Valkyrie, elf and a wizard, and if you didn't know that, the game will tell you over and over again
a lot
that your class needs something.
Food usually
now.
Yeah.
Right.
Usually hungry. Wizard needs food badly. And I went through those old town files. This is interesting. There's a bunch of separate files that just say wizard, elf, Valkyrie, and then a separate file that says needs food badly. So they just took those and program them together. Didn't make separate lines for it.
That's right. Smash them right together. Now, Ed Logg, our creator here, who was looking for his next big game after Asteroids.
Yeah.
And he was, he's employed by Atari, and his kids were really interested in D&D, as all of us were at about that age in 85.
Yeah.
And that's what he was looking for, to make something like this. Yeah. Saul Dandy said that's quite the dandy game and came up with this.
Saul Dandy. 100 levels, guys, 100 freaking levels to play in this game. If you've never played it, just be prepared that it will take you a while. You'll see a lot of the same stuff over and over, and it's fine. Okay.
And if you could come to terms, this is what I always forget about Gauntlet until I hop back in. The Gauntlet is, you have to accept the fact. I still have trouble with games that create damage as you go along. Impossible, you're going to get hurt. That's why I usually play ranged characters. I'm not much of a tank because I don't like to get hurt when I'm playing.
Yeah.
Because I don't like to, in addition, manage my defense while I'm working on my offense. I don't like to go, "Oh, I got to look at my health." And that's what's so great about Gauntlet is that they tell you so you don't have to keep your eye on it because it'll tell you your warrior is needs food badly or which restores your health, or it'll tell you that what is this? Some of the other words it's about to die or something like
Valkyrie
that.
Valkyrie is about to die.
So reach into your pocket and pull out more coin. He says. So I every time I play Gauntlet, I always kind of go, "Oh, I can't stand this," because you have to literally. You can in certain areas where the monster generators are, you can't shoot fast enough with your character to make any forward momentum. So you literally have to walk through them and destroy them to get to the generator, and it's going to take health.
Yeah,
and very intentional.
And those little dark specter dudes.
The death? You mean death?
Is that who that is?
I think that, yeah, that's death. Death is a big
I can never
turd.
Tell what the frick it's supposed to be, but I hate it.
You can only kill him with potions.
Yeah. Yeah, he can eat a turd.
He can also eat a poo. Also, another thing, too. I've memified it in my head so much, I thought every time you shot food, it would disappear. But that's not true.
Mm.
I thought every time you shot potions, it would always disappear, but that wasn't always true. So I was always super cautious after I shot the first one that disappeared. Like,
so was
oh,
I. So was I yesterday.
Again.
I was like being really careful. I don't want to shoot any food. I don't want to do that.
And but then I discovered, I'm like, oh, in certain levels and areas and in certain situations, you can shoot the crap out of food and it doesn't disappear. And I'm like, wait, I thought it was an always thing. Mm. What do you mean not either or?
Yeah. I didn't know that until you just said it. I didn't know that.
Right. Like I said, it got me so freaked out because it's such a lifeline. It's the only thing.
Might be a dip switch for that. There might be a way to like toggle that in the arcade board and say,
maybe.
I don't ever want the food to disappear. Probably isn't.
I would never shoot the food, man.
Yep.
Don't shoot the food.
Yeah.
Don't shoot the potion. Moron. I didn't know it was so granular in D&D with stats as far as I knew that by picking your different classes that like this guy's getting chased by death.
He's
right
getting
now.
He's wrecked by death right now. Two deaths.
He really is. Yeah. He's literally to death. What was I going to say? I forget, but I just noticed one thing I am going to say while I'm watching this part.
Yeah.
I also didn't know when you run up and down, like, you know, straight up or straight down or side to side, he goes one speed your character does. But then when you go diagonally, he goes faster. And I thought, wait, is that just an illusion? No, the character literally does go faster.
No, he totally does. Diagonal is fast. Absolutely.
Yeah. And he also is the fastest character, I believe.
I'm kind of a completionist when it comes to Dungeon Crawler, so I don't want to leave until everything's dead. But that's actually a bad strategy in this game because they're just going to keep coming. Find the exit. Get the F out. You know?
Yeah. Keep collecting that treasure. That's where what exactly is the end game here with Gauntlet? There's not. So it's kind of like you kind of put it in yourself like, oh, I want to beat my high score.
Yeah.
And that's what you're kind of doing. And as you go hit treasure rooms and stuff, which requires you progressing further, is where the win mechanic is. You have to make your own decision for winning. Am I winning?
Yeah.
I'm winning because I've got my highest score.
This guy's doing awful good on his own, I've noticed.
He's freaking doing amazing. Yeah. And I usually play Gauntlet by myself.
Yeah, me too.
Occasionally some turd would come along and play.
That's because they'd shoot your food or eat your food before, and you needed it more than he did. His dumb wizard was at like 300 health. You're at 2, and he's like, well, "I'm gonna eat it."
Bloom, bloom, bloom.
Yeah, f that guy. All right, then along came this right here. Another great tracked mode for an arcade machine. This is based on some actual tune. Gauntlet 2. Very similar. You would be forgiven if you saw it and went, oh, that looks like Gauntlet, and didn't know it was Gauntlet 2, because they look almost identical. They're not really different.
Yeah, it looks like they use a lot of the same resources. I mean, it was only 1 year later when this hit the arcade Gauntlet 2.
Yeah, I don't think it was even a full year. I think it was like maybe a little bit, but
they probably had a little beefier hardware, and they just added some new resources and things to the game, but a lot of the same stuff.
Some of the levels were a little bit more, I don't know, like this one we're looking at here, just a little different. You know, they shook that up some different tile
sets.
They did.
Yeah, got some shrubbery, I think, in some areas you get to as well. It's a much more. They focused on color a lot more here.
Yeah, for sure.
This Gauntlet too, because now you can play four wizards.
Yeah, four wizards at once. Four Valkyries, if you want. Four whatever. I don't recommend it.
Red Wizard.
I like
needs food bad.
I think that's a good idea from a like, hey, we want people to play their favorite, and if they come up to a machine and their favorite's already being taken, that's not fun.
Right.
So let's let them have what they want. I totally understand that, but I think a well balanced team of the four different classes is the way to play this game, personally.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think I enjoyed the first one for that factor, and even though it is available in the second one, and it's fun for like switching stuff up. But yeah, I think the gameplay part was better when the first one, because having that balance of different classes.
And this one featured more, I wouldn't call them bosses, more sub bosses. Like, yeah, we're looking at one right now.
They actually had sub-bosses here. They didn't have anything in the first one.
Yeah, first one was just little tiny dudes, but that guy was like, hey, you want to get past me? Better shoot me a whole ton, and I'm going to try to eat your quarters by shooting 1,000 things at you.
He's there was that dragon he was just shooting on screen. That was that thing does not like a dragon, by the way. But yeah, that's the red dragon.
It did not. It looked like a dude in a bad cosplay suit. It's what it looked like. It's really bad. But
top
whatever.
Top down, baby.
This was this is top down. Freaking not even eight. Well, I guess it was 8-bit, right? This was an 8-bit.
I didn't look at the board to see if it was 8-bit, but it's definitely it kicks the pants off the NES 8-bit home computer. So. I didn't look at the comparison of the hardware.
That sounds right to me, though, for some reason.
But, yeah, we didn't talk about the ports on the first one, but the NES version sucks butt compared to the Sega Master System version of Gauntlet 1, even though the music is way better in NES version.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Well, I played, Gauntlet 2, 86, I played that almost entirely on the NES, and I remember it being a pretty good version. But one was not considered good. So I think two did okay, though, on the NES. That became part of that is because that became the dominant platform that year. It became clear that you better throw your resources at the one that's winning.
Right. And, I was surprised how much better the Master System was. I didn't have an NES. We've talked about this before, I believe, early on in Play Retro. But I had a Master System. I did not have an NES until later on when someone gave me one. And so I was totally Master System all the way, even though... God, the cover art for the Master System is so ugly.
Oh, it's terrible.
It was totally of its time because it's got that grid, sparse artwork on the fronts. And it looks so ugly now, but man, I loved it back in the day. It felt very, very futuristic.
See if I can find the... they did this with all their games. They had that horrible grid, like you mentioned. Here it is, Chad. Look at this thing. So this is... I'll put this up on the screen.
I will say this. The Gauntlet 1 for the NES, one of the reasons why it wasn't as good is because it was the 10-gen, a.k.a. Part of Atari, and it was not officially approved. It did not get that official seal of approval like the first one. Look at those grids. Look at that Gauntlet grid.
Yep,
oh, look at that grid. Artwork, too. Art. What a stinker dinker.
Yeah, it's bad, dude. It's an ugly game.
You got Thor and Thyra and Questor and Merlin have never looked... more sus.
Yeah, I don't trust any of them, especially
it's US
Thor.
Gold, though, baby. US gold.
Thor's got muscles that don't exist.
I know, it's so funny. It's like he's got pecs on his pecs. It's weird. I love it. Pecs, he's got two rows of rib muscles. I don't know what that is.
I don't either. But Master System was really good at moving sprites around like the Genesis would be in the 16-bit space. Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me. The Nintendo's so flickery.
Yeah, yeah. It
look bad.
If you want to see a really interesting NES cart, though, it's a different color. It's not that gray because it was not a Nintendo official cart. This was that time when... Nintendo is trying to enforce the you can only put games on our system using our carts, and Atari 10-gen was like, let's show what we got. And it's an interesting cart.
It's got a little curve on the front of it here.
The game wasn't that great, though. Maybe it did need that Nintendo official seal of approval.
I guess so. But look at that. That's very different than the usual cartridges you got, which look like...
Yeah, that looks more like an Atari cartridge, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. That looks more like is that the one for the NES?
The
8-bit computer.
That's the NES game cartridge.
Yeah, yeah, nice.
I don't have
the Atari 800.
It totally does. I don't have my other cartridge here, but that's a very different design.
Yeah.
Compared to what Nintendo was doing.
But look at that artwork. He only had one row of abs.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. He had that was actually kind of decent art on the front of that.
Yeah. But not bad.
Whatever. The worst thing is this. Here, hold on. I'll share this with you. I defy you to find worse artwork.
Are you going to pull up? Is it going to be Mega Man or is it something else?
No, this is just like the character screen.
Oh, yes. I love that one. Which one is that one? Is that the NES version?
NES, and it's horrendous.
Okay.
Look at that girl's arm. What is happening?
I will give the NES version this. It is better than the Master System menu system.
Okay.
It's at least more entertaining. I don't know why they're fighting. I thought this was a fight in the Red Dragon, but it looks more like the the lizard man that Kirk has to beat on that planet. What's that guy's name again? The Cracknar. What's his name?
It's a single word name. Like Chris or Girth. What is it?
The Gorn, says Gorn, the Wraith. Good job. It's the Gorn. The Gorn.
The Girth. What was I saying?
The Girth. It was close. It was a G word.
Doesn't make any sense to me. remind me, what did Treasure do in this game? Did it just give you money? Was that points?
Yeah, Treasure was just essentially so that you could look at a score. So, I mean, you're basically making your own goals. It's like, I want to see who makes the most levels, or I want to see who can, who get the most points or collects the most potions. This dude's collecting so many potions for an elf.
He's into it.
Some of those potions will clear screen. I love those. Those are my favorite. Just clear the screen. It's like, get out of here.
Yeah, get out of here,
death,
baby.
That's the only way you can kill death, by the way, is with a potion. Magic is the only thing that'll kill death. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. But we also didn't mention this new enemy in the second game called It. If it tags you, you are it, and you can give it away or let all the monsters descend upon you. That was a nightmare. So you could give it to one of your buddies, though. Didn't you just have to touch him?
That's all you did. You're literally playing tag. So you would get it. Mm-hmm. The enemy would get you, and you would have it. So you'd have the cooties. Then you can give it to a friend. All the monsters started chasing you when you were it. And you could give it to somebody, or you could run away and save your buddies if you wanted to.
Yeah.
But why would you?
Yeah, why would you? I mean,
it's so much more fun to go, I'm going to give it to you.
Yeah, that was like, what do you call that? There's something, not King of the Hill. What's the game type as a kid you'd play out in the yard?
I just call tag. This is what I would mean.
I guess it is tag, or you're it, or whatever.
Yeah, you're it. Yeah.
That was the whole idea. I don't know why this guy's just banging on that door. Did you see that? That's all he's doing.
No, I missed it. Was he banging on the door? Well, so there's in this one you got. Oh yeah, so there's invisible. I don't know if he did something, but there's invisible walls here. It's odd. I don't know what he's doing. It's hilarious, but I like it. Maybe he's having regret because he used that key elsewhere. He's like, I should have exited. I should have done it. I should have exited. I went out.
Yeah, because the keys weren't door specific. They were just quantity. So if you had a key, it didn't matter what door you used the key for. You could go through it.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what he did. He locked himself. Oh, he's got a teleport here though.
Yeah.
So we got teleports in this one. And you can, okay. So did he kill something and got a key? Maybe.
I don't know what that was. Maybe that was a key. It was so fast. I missed it.
It was
fast. He says, let's see. You got the ricochet shots. That was new.
Yes.
Yeah. You got magic walls. I was no
good at it, but they had it.
Yeah, they had it in there. They had magic walls that can be invisible, or turn into enemies and the dragon to beat. Among some of the other additions. So the game had more stuff, than one.
Yeah.
It's a proper sequel.
Yeah, they tried to take it. They do what they always do with a sequel. It's like in the first one, you have to be realistic. You don't know how it's going to sell. You don't know how it's going to do. And then you get a hit on your hands. You're like, oh, we got to get part two out immediately while it's still hot.
Yeah.
And you start pulling out all those ideas that didn't make it into the first one, probably for good reason. Mm-hmm. And you put it into the sequel. Sometimes they hit, sometimes they miss.
Yeah.
I think it added a because it didn't happen all the time,
right? It's rare.
And so I thought it was fun. I thought it was a nice little.
Well, it's a fun way to. I used to screw with my brother with it, and that was worth it. So like, hey Matt, come here for a second. Oh, wizard has shit badly or whatever.
Wizard has it badly.
Now I want to play for you the worst audio I've heard this week. Okay, I played a little of this too. It is so bad, but here it is. Sort of, I guess, enjoy it. Whoops, why is that so quiet? Oh, that's the wrong one. Here it is. Okay, this game's heinous. All right, I just want to put that out there. This is Gauntlet, the third encounter for the Atari Lynx. It went nowhere else. This is the only place.
Atari said, we just bought the Lynx. What we got over here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're not wrong. Like, hey, let's. And one guy did it. He made it's kind of his own game. Yeah. It's not.
This was not Ed Log. No. This was not our friend Log. No.
No, this is some other guy who made a log, if you ask me. I mean, whatever. It's for what it is. It's, I guess, fine. But it's a lot more open. It gets rid of the very tight corridor design of the previous mazes, and instead it's like open spaces. You still have to fight a lot of stuff, pick up keys and whatnot. but you see less of the screen overall. There was kind of a weird first person thing at the bottom. You see this in this video? It's so weird.
Yeah, they went with this. So they went with the Lynx's rarely used vertical mode. So you would flip it sideways and you would be more tall than wide.
Yeah. And it was awkward and weird.
I kind of like how the maze, that little mini map that's not a mini map on the left-hand side, lower left-hand side, it shows as you're approaching the monster, it shows them in first person perspective. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to the treasure monster or keys, they all look like you're coming up on them, almost like a little secondary.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's almost the opposite of what games would do eventually, which is the main view is a first person view and the little view is a top down view, but they've got the flip here going on.
Yeah. I like it. That's probably the one thing I do like. But this originally wasn't. Look, he's not even moving his legs. There's no animation on that. This wasn't really originally Gauntlet. It was Time Quest and Treasure Chest, and they branded it and tried to shove it in.
Yeah,
shove it in.
I mean, it's fun as a relic to see and stuff. I played a bit of it. It's rough. It's not great.
It's not great,
but it's,
I agree. It was my least favorite of the Gauntlet stuff that I played.
The one thing I do like about it is it lets you choose a ton of weird characters. You can be a rock star and an alien and a robot, which explains why this was a different game and they rebranded it, because you know that stuff.
I think the guy
on
screen is the punk rocker right now, which is hilarious. It's
super
and pointless,
dumb. Super dumb.
But I love it.
I kind of love that it exists as well. Then you shift forward and you end up with a game called Gauntlet 3, a proper sequeled game. This is 1991, and that sounded a bit like this. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
You hear that?
We're on the Amiga, baby. We've got some real power.
Yeah, this thing's rocking. It was also on Genesis, wasn't it? I think. Maybe.
I think Gauntlet 4 was the one that was on
Genesis. Oh, you're right. 4 is on Genesis. Yeah. You're right. You're totally right. So, Final Quest, the 1991 game. Music's cool. It's real metally and stupid, you know, in a good way.
Right.
But boy,
I didn't realize until this version of Gauntlet how, you know, heavy metal rock and roll Gauntlet really should be. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's okay. Like, I like the, it's definitely a change in tone, but this game looks like trash now. Look at this thing.
I kind of like it, don't get me wrong.
I like it for its tenacity to be different, but it's a...
It's isometric with the worst sprite animations since the NES version of Gauntlet Top Down. And it's so metal, and you get this fist of scroll whenever you pick up certain things. Yep. But it's still Gauntlet, you know, as you're still running from a whole bunch of ghosty monsters, killing... you know, you got to destroy these monster generators so they don't keep coming. And it's just
look at the ghost, though. There's a stupid, it's a really badly designed, ugly game that really doesn't feel that much like regular Gauntlet. Like, I don't know, this is maybe ahead of its time and behind its time at the same time somehow.
It's like we talk about it lots of times. It's like the stoner dude who drew on his desk said, "I'm gonna make a game."
Yep,
and it's kind of badass.
Yeah, that kid in detention sitting next to you, he carved this in his desk with a knife. That's Gauntlet 3.
And instead of dungeon crawling and lots of this, you're overworlding, isometric, and you're fighting against stuff like there's less fantasy creatures. There's like, I think you fight alligators.
Yeah.
And you still fight ghosts. They're still the primary bad guy, but there's like a different set of monsters. But it's worth playing. Yeah. I think it's kind of hilarious.
As cool box art.
Right.
Not nearly.
It does have some of the best box. Oh, yeah, the box art is by the fantasy artist Peter Andrew Jones.
Yeah,
and
he's great.
It looks good.
Yeah, they paid money for that shiz.
Yeah. They paid money for this well-orchestrated music. They really dived into the art. But I mean, we're still on the Amiga. And there's only so much the Amiga can do, even though it was a badass machine for the time.
Yeah.
It's still is what it is.
I just feel like it was also signaling a time where this was about to, the series itself was about to mature, and this was a weird, awkward midstep, and no one remembers it. Nobody played it. Nobody had an Amiga in this country anyway, or a lot less people did. And I think that probably hurt it. A little bit, but I do like the fist holding the paper with the knuckles.
Fist. Is that not so hardcore rock and roll, it's baby?
Pretty badass. Yeah, look at that thing.
You could have gotten this. I didn't look at the 8-bit computer home versions of these, but I'm assuming they were much worse.
Oh, yeah. They had to be, right? That was the...
Yeah, they had to be.
The Amiga killed everybody in that department.
Yeah, Amiga was killing it.
Yeah. Okay, now... Other than that, kind of not remarkable. It's fine for what it is. But then the Genesis generation got to have four. That doesn't sound like a Genesis 90s video game. I don't know what does, man. Listen to that. That was 93, Sega Genesis. It's a pretty good Gauntlet 1 port.
Yes.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's kind of, you think, I was a little disappointed when I played this system this week, because I'd never played Gauntlet 4 for the Sega Genesis, but I was like, oh, this is just Gauntlet 1.
Uh-huh.
But it's, you know, it's got up-res graphics and stuff, and got a whole full soundtrack, and, you know, it's near, it's, you know, we talk about arcade perfect, it's arcade fine. It's not arcade perfect, because it's not one-to-one like the original, and there's some differences in the gameplay. And there's different modes, but the arcade mode is pretty much what you would experience at the arcade with some different, you know, graphics and different music. And this was M2. I don't know if you remember these guys, but they've done a lot of games. So Sega M2.
Their
first game.
I didn't know that. M2 did. Isn't that the so the guys in M2 did Daytona and everything?
Did all the things. This is where they got their start in making this Gauntlet 4 from 1983.
Yu Suzuki? Was he working on this?
That's a good question. I didn't dig that deep. I just knew that they said M2 at the time. So I'm assuming that also included.
So it's just weird because this should be called Gauntlet Remastered or something, or Reborn.
That's what got me too, because I was like, I was ready for a new experience, you know, new classes.
Yeah.
You know, I was ready for everything, and
it's just Gauntlet.
Instead, I got it's Gauntlet. But you know what? If you're wanting a Gauntlet experience,
it's a damn fine Gauntlet. It's the Gauntlet I prefer of all of the porty stuff that came after the original arcade. This is the one I would prefer to play. So,
yeah, if I had a cart for this, I would totally plug it in and play it on my Sega Genesis.
Yeah, 100%. Now, prepare yourself for some years later, 6 years later. Well, about 3 years later. Wait, what? 93 to 98?
Wait, what? I can't do the math.
Five years later. Jeez. Gauntlet Legends hits the arcade.
We're back, baby.
We're back. We're finally back to where it began. It also ended up on N64, PSX, and, of course, the Dreamcast. And it is a true sequel to 1 and 2. Also had a
We pretend
password.
Like those threes and four didn't exist. Right?
Oh, yeah. We pretend, but we can't help but have them there. It sounded like this.
Use magic to kill enemies.
Ooh, back to a voice.
Ooh. Is this? Collect gold to buy power-ups.
Yeah. Get some gold. What else you got? Give me more. Some more advice.
Oh, I love it.
They went all in on that. And if you look at this game, I mean, it's ugly as shit now, but this is that era where 3D was now like here. We're here now.
Yeah.
It's late 90s. Let's go.
Did you play a PlayStation game during this era? Then hello, isometric PlayStation looking game. That's what you're looking at pretty much.
You want some jiggly looking textures, probably closer to N64 in terms of capability. In fact, I think it was the arcade board was something Nintendo related.
It might have been.
Yeah,
Atari. I'm trying to think because there was some trading at this point in time. Midway had taken over the arcade production right for Atari at this point in time. I think
something like that. Yeah, like, and I think maybe those Silicon Graphics boards were all over the place. So I don't know. I'm trying to think of another game. Some of them use Voodoo cards. Remember that NFL Blitz had an actual Voodoo like PC card in it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I did put it in the trivia. Gauntlet was originally owned by Atari. However, Midway bought all of Atari's assets in the late 90s. Thus acquiring Gauntlet, Midway would produce two Gauntlet games. And then they would fold at this point. Warner Brothers acquired the rights of the Gauntlet franchise.
Yeah. Yep, there it is.
And then they released that thing in 2014 that was, I played it. I kind of liked it.
It's okay.
It had its moments. I have a fondness for it because it was one of the last games that me and Ralphie, remember Ralphie?
Oh.
Who passed away.
Yeah.
And we played this a couple of times. We worked really hard to get this working, and it was a lot of fun because it maybe probably because of the memories.
Yeah, that's honestly the truth. But I also had a cool idea with colors and the characters. So the character would produce a certain color, and there was a combination. If you were killing a thing that matched that color, you would increase damage or something. They tried to straddle a line and say, okay, this is an action top down, you know, three quarter view sort of isometric dungeon crawler in the tradition of Gauntlet, but also it'll feel a little like Diablo for some people.
Yeah,
and
it felt very Diablo.
It's okay. You know,
it's okay, but it did do something that I was thinking a lot about during 1998. I remember there was a time when I would go to the arcade, and home consoles had, you know, spoiled us on saves, especially progression. And Gauntlet Legends had a progression system in it, and they allowed you to do something at the arcade, which was your name on that machine, along with a passcode when you entered that name. Could be re-entered the next time upon your play, and you can continue your progression.
Oh man, that was unheard of in arcade machines. Yeah, nobody did that.
Yeah, that was very rare to see in the arcades, and it was a really interesting idea. I was thinking more during that time. I was like, oh man, why don't they just give us like little cards that we can carry, you know, to do that kind of stuff and have our game saves, because that's what we're doing. The arcades were now fighting with longer play progression type gameplay. From the home consoles, and they were trying to figure out how to do that in arcade.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to handle it, I think.
Yeah.
The 2014 game, as you can see, I'm showing a little video here. It is, you know, hordes of enemies, check.
Yeah,
Dude, what does a very specific skill set, check. Top down, check. Like, they got a lot of what made that game that, but I just feel like the genie's out of the bottle at this point. There's Diablo, there's Path of Exile, there's a million games that have taken the formula and moved it forward. And this, it was kind of like, well, we have to straddle it. We have to be accessible and arcadey, but we also have to have some meaning to everything.
Right.
And I don't know if it ever, I don't think it ever worked for him really. Just was it?
I agree. I remember playing it some. I only played it with Ralph. That's the only time I ever played. I played it a couple times just in preparation to play. But after that, I was just like, hey, these we good.
Yeah. But these are the main games. They were great. Up through 98, pretty solid stuff. 2001 got Gauntlet Dark Legacy, also an arcade experience, along with some other ports, I believe. That
some
one is
people
not,
like Dark Legacy, but I'm like, oh, okay.
A lot of people do like Dark Legacy. It was very popular in my arcade, I'll say that.
Yeah.
There were always people lined up to play that thing. And I think this one struck a chord with players for maybe they just were getting in the mood. 01 would have been a good time to go, oh yeah, the Gauntlet, remember that? Sure do.
Because at this point in time, what, we're like almost 15 years later since the first Gauntlet? Mm-hmm. Yeah, about 15 years since the first. That's about the time we start feeling nostalgia.
Yeah, it's about a 15-year cycle, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, later, we got the Deeper Dungeons expansion in... this was released in 87 for Gauntlet Legends. That's weird.
Yeah, it was the one at the arcade. So, yeah. So, in... Oh, wait. Yeah. So, that was the arcade... Is that right? 90, or is it 97? That might have been a typo.
Oh, it might have been 97.
Yeah, it might have been 97.
Gauntlet Legends. That would have been 90... No, that would have been 99. Or the same year, 98. Because 98 is when Legends came out. So, I don't know.
Right.
But that's weird, isn't it?
I must have got something wrong there. Weird. Okay.
Like a freaking Gauntlet game with DLC. It's weird.
Yeah. That is wild.
Very weird. Anyway, it is fun kicking worms in Gauntlet Dark Legacy.
That's look really cool. I do like that idea of worm kicking.
Yeah.
That's something. So, I mean, what else are you going to find in a dungeon?
Yeah.
A dragon? No, worms. You're going to be stepping on a lot of them.
Yeah. And this is the year or right. Well, I guess Diablo came out in 2000. Diablo 2, I mean.
I think you're right.
Yes. I think Diablo 2 was such a massive hit that I think the Gauntlet people are like, well, we could do that once we can make that. But I think that, again, genie out of the bottle, they'd already pissed in your popcorn, you were done.
So. Yeah, because they weren't really pushing anything much new. They were just saying, here's Gauntlet, but now in this newer format, check it out. Mm-hmm. It's prettier, but it's still the same formula.
Yeah. And I'll give them this. You are an extremely important point in retro gaming.
Yes.
And no one can take that from you. You are Pac-Man. Never. You are Donkey Kong. You are Galaxian. Like, you are one of those. I will give you that.
You got your credit there.
Yeah. Thank you for having my credit. All right. that'll do it there. We're going to dive into this right here.
Destroy it.
Oh, by the way, if you're trying to get a hold of that old stuff, definitely check out archive.org and other emulators. You'll have a good chance.
Oh, yeah. There. I played some of these like the DOS versions. Okay, so archive.org I go to so I can grab my ROM sets usually for arcade stuff and some of the the console stuff. But if you really want to do some DOS gaming without actually downloading anything, archive.org has it, or myabandonware.org. I better check. Anyway, do a Google search first on that. And myabandonware has a lot of where you can play it, the DOS games in browser using DOSBox. And I will give you one word of warning, though. If you go to play the first Gauntlet in DOS, you're going to have to do some video manipulation because DOSBox wants to try to use it in VGA mode, and you need to be in EGA mode. That includes RetroArch as well. So just a little heads up, if you're using the DOSBox to emulate that original Gauntlet.
DOSBox is a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Well, it's great. It's just highly configurable. That's all.
Yeah. It has to do a lot of things.
A lot of work. All right, let's try to guess each other's games here. We're going to play Guess My Game, where we take an old clip of a video game and try to stump each other. Guess My Game. All right, here's mine first. Here are your hints. This is a 1983 game, but it also was in the Genesis in the 90s. All right, and there's a new one this year. Those are your hints.
Oh, there's a new one this year?
Yeah. All right. Here you go. Ringing any bells?
No.
Might be a little tricky. This wasn't even a game I was supposed to like, but I really did back then. I'll give you another hint. It is a long-running series by the publisher. Is it Koei? K-O-E-I? Koei? Anyway, part of Tecmo. Yeah.
Right, okay.
That name is synonymous with the kind of game this is. That may not give much away.
Yeah. Wow. I don't even recognize this. I mean, I'm kind of getting a RPG vibe, of course. Yeah.
It's in the vein of that.
That vein.
Let's say, right? Let's say it's more historical,
like
though.
On an adventure.
If that helps you, if it's more historical.
It's more historical. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now we're talking.
And if you had to give it an exact, like a modern genre, I'd call it strategy role-playing game.
Okay. Strategy role-playing game. Okay. And there's a new one this year?
Yeah, they're doing like a revival or a something. I haven't seen it yet, but there's some this year. It's either already out or it was announced or something.
I haven't been playing a lot of these lately, so I haven't been paying attention to the feeds on this. It feels like do you remember this game called America? Do you remember that game?
Yeah, where you had to help get the revolution over with and get the right people in charge and all that.
That's what this feels like.
You're in the place. No, it's not America, but it's not. But you're in the vein of the gameplay for sure. I know which one you mean. You give up?
I'm going to have to surrender on this one. I've got to pull up my my flag, white flag.
All right, white flag. Give it up. Here's surrender. Your game. The game is called Nobunaga. Nobunaga's ambition, to be specific.
Oh my god, there's no way I would have guessed. I don't even know how to even spell that. I don't even have even seen this game.
It's Nobunaga apostrophe s ambition. And here's the short of it.
Wait, I think I do remember this.
It says it's a series of turn-based strategy grand strategy role-playing simulation games. The original game was one of the first of its genre, being released in March of 1983 by the Japanese video game maker Koei. The game takes place during the Sengoku period of feudal Japan. Player is tasked with achieving the ultimate goal of Warlord Oda Nobunaga and conquest of bunches of Japan. Basically, it worked like this. It was like Risk, kind of.
Right.
Except not really, because you didn't put army. Well, it kind of is and kind of isn't. But you would roll essentially dice for character creation, and it would tell you how what your king or your warlord was going to be like. And then you decide what part of this place you're going to start in, what part of feudal Japan. Well, I'm going to do this zone, this prefecture or whatever. So now I run that. Now if I'm going to fight, I got to say, well, I'm going to fight these guys over here first. And you can turn off auto battle. You can have auto battles turned off so you don't have to watch them when the players are playing each other. But when you fight, it's like chess, basically. Or more modern, like... what's a good example? Fire Emblem. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
It's that sort of thing. I played quite a bit back then and thought it was rad. And it says Nobugunga's, or whatever you say his name. Ambition.
Nobunga. Nobunga. Right?
It says this, that word, ambition, colon rebirth, comes out on, let's see. Oh, it came out on July 21st, 2022. I wonder how it did.
Interesting.
Let me just see real quick here.
Yeah,
came over the Switch, Windows, PlayStation.
I never played
4.
Them. I've seen the cover art before.
Yeah, I can't find any reviews. Maybe this is Japan only.
It might have been.
But that game I played in the Genesis was definitely over here. Here we go. Ambition Rebirth. Is there a review? No. Looks like it hasn't come here yet. Oh, it's on Steam?
No.
Oh, it is.
No, you can no has.
It's on Steam.
I tried to click on it and the link went nowhere. So I don't know what happened. Maybe it did. I don't know.
English language not supported. Yeah, I think this was Japan only. That's the deal.
Maybe that's my problem. Maybe it's mine's trying to go like, no, you can't go there. You don't have that language.
It's a cool game. Check it out. You can emulate it, whatever. Brian, I'm going to play yours now.
So you're saying it wasn't Choplifter. I got you. Okay.
No Choplifter. Nope. I'm going to play yours now. What do you got here? What are you going to set me up?
I'm at the arcade in 1988 in the arcade. If you don't guess it by the beginning, you probably will have it by the end. I went with a little in the spirit of Christmas coming up. I went with a little easier one.
Okay, I'm into this. Let's give it a try here. I'm going to play it. Here we go. What's he saying?
Valkyrie needs food.
Oh, this is the arcade version of RoboCop.
Yeah, I figured by the time you got to that, you'd have to have it. I figured you might not get it right away, but by the time you get there, you got it.
Yeah, let's hear this part of the very end with him talking.
Thank you for your cooperation.
That's great. That's a good one. I feel pretty good about guessing that. I wouldn't have got it without him saying that, though. There's no way.
Right. Oh, yeah. I knew. I was like, I left it in there. Oddly enough, 2 weeks in a row, both my audio clips were at the same point of the gameplay video. It was weird because at first I thought I messed up. And I'm like, wait, what's going on? So 2 weeks in a row, it was like 1 minute and 25 seconds to 2 minutes and 25 seconds. I captured 1 minute of audio.
Oh, wow.
And yeah.
Weird. That's weird timing. Weird coincidence.
Why are you copying and pasting stuff everywhere?
I'm not. I'm just, I cut out a thing for length. It was too long. That email's too long.
Links, okay.
Yeah, you're all good. You know, real-time production. That's what we do here.
Yeah, that's what happens. And then I pointed out and broke the mystery.
Yeah, now the mystery's broken. Let's do this. We're going to read an email a text this week. 801-471-0462 is the destination. You can call and leave voicemails there as well. I'm going to start going through those. But if you want to just do a text.
But you have to say it like RoboCop if you do, though.
Yeah, you say, excuse me, Bob. I'm
Bob.
Let's see. Where is it? Oh, here it is. Listening to Play Retro, says this person with no name. They didn't leave their name. Yeah. Says, listening to Play Retro, you mentioned Hideo Kojima.
Yes.
Hideo Kojima. Any plans on covering the Metal Gear series anytime soon? Well, I found out today that Metal Gear is 35 years old today.
Yes, today. Yes, it is time to play a little retro Metal Gear.
Yeah, baby, this old stuff like the NES game and talk about that legacy because that's a hell of a thing. That's a series that nobody back then was going, this will be one of the longest running, most influential things of all time. Way. Nobody said that.
No way.
Nobody.
Yeah, no way.
That's sheer force of Kojima will.
Yeah, yeah, Kojima that. Made that happen.
I guarantee it. Certainly, Konami sure fought him a lot along the way.
Oh, yeah.
But Kojima
has had such a story. I can't wait to get to we need an episode just completely about some of these creators, and we're going to do one of those eventually for him. But I'm looking forward to talking a little bit more about his role in this.
He also doesn't age. He looks exactly the same. Yeah,
it's so wild.
I don't understand his deal. It's got some weird juice flowing through.
He's a walking simulator is what he is.
We're definitely going to be doing that. However,
right.
Our next episode, now I want to preface this just a little bit. Our next episode.
We're going to preface it with, hear me out.
Okay, hear me out. All right?
Yeah.
All the boys in the room. Sometimes we all think that early arcade and home console and video games in general were for us, the boys.
Yeah.
Okay?
Boys club.
It's a thing. It's a bit of a problem. Still kind of a problem today in some ways. All right. For whatever reason, some people get a little defensive about the ladies moving in on your gaming time. All right. Now, look, you're going to hear this and you're going to go, oh, my gosh, really? And I'm going to say, yeah, really, because everything else we talk about, dude stuff today, dude stuff. All right. Even that Valkyrie knows this is dude stuff, and what she's there.
Yeah, yeah. She's like, bro. I mean, if you played the NES version of Gauntlet and had the overhead view of her when she turns one way and you get some cleavage shot, you're like, oh.
Yeah, this is for the boys. This. Yeah, this right here is for the boys. So what we're going to do next week is talk about the early Barbie games.
Yes, finally, right. Barbie's going to get some love. I've had to hold Scott down.
Yeah. I was unsure at first. I was like, I don't know about this. And Brian convinced me. The reason he convinced me is because I had the same reaction a lot of people that annoy me have, which is, that's for girls. Okay, yeah. Is it though? What's in those? Why were they so popular? There were tons of them. 84 on the C64, NES and DOS games. They had a game on the Game Boys, SNES, Genesis, DOS. Stuff up to this day. They outsold Doom, that game.
Yeah. That's what piqued my interest. I knew it was the topic I wanted to discuss when I saw a recent article that said that the fashion designer 1996 during the Christmas season outsold Doom. It was the first commercially successful video game made for girls, and it started a movement. And I'm like, oh man, my sisters used to get so much Barbie stuff as kids during Christmas time, and I was like. It was just really on my mind, and it just really piqued my interest. And I'm like, I suddenly had this fear of missing out. I'm like, it outsold Doom. Mm-hmm. Did I miss out on some great gaming mechanics, or just did I miss out?
Yeah, we might have.
I just had to do it.
We might have. So we're going to find out for ourselves. We're going to play a bunch of these. We're going to come to a table. We're going to talk about them and do it in the most adult way possible. And I'm actually kind of excited about it now. So
she drives a Corvette.
Damn straight. She does.
Like in the first couple of ones, 1984. This is also something else that interests me, too, because my retro brain started clicking when I started thinking about these. I'm like, oh, Barbie, 1984, Commodore 64. Was this one of the first Mattel games or one of the first toy properties to make it to a video game successfully?
Right.
I don't know, but I have the question. Yes. And I want to know the answer.
Yeah, we're going to dig. We're going to find out the answers. And this is all nice timing because that movie's about to come out. There's a trailer out for it now, which, you know, looks awfully tongue in cheek, but also like it might be some fun. And of course, Barbie's been in these Pixar Toy Story movies that Brian hates. So we'll talk about that connection. anyway, I do want to talk about a Barbie game that outsold Doom. That's interesting to me. So we're going to do it next week. Don't worry. Next year we'll get like Micro Machines or some boy thing right away.
Hot Wheels. All those old Hot Wheels games. Man, I love those games.
Those were great. And the Micro Machine games I have a huge love for. So we probably do like a combined episode of that or something. But
yeah, that was like, it was NES was the Micro Machines. Was that the first one? Yeah.
Yep, I think so.
I'm excited about that.
One time Scott Fletcher said this famous thing. Hold on. See if I can find it. Nope.
Yeah, Barbie rocks. Is that what he said?
Nope. He says this.
Ladies, we heard you.
Oh, he said it before, but also this guy did. That's not Fletcher.
Ladies, we heard you.
Ladies, we've heard you.
Ladies, we heard you. Barbie is coming to town. Hope you have a good Christmas, because I hope you got some Barbies for Christmas.
Yeah, maybe you did. Christmas. I don't know. Yeah. I don't want to. I'm not here to judge. You get what you get. No. I get what I get. And I'm going to talk about Barbie games next week. So that'll be fun. That'll be our final episode of 2022, by the way.
Yeah, so 49. You're gonna hear episode that. 49.
Indeed. That is going to do it for today's tomfoolery. However, I would like to remind you that Play Retro doesn't exist without your help on our Patreon at patreon.com/playretro. You'll never get an ad. You get pre-show content every week, including today. We had a great discussion before the show. And other great benefits that can be yours if you only go to patreon.com/playretro today and show your love for your favorite retro gaming podcast. Send us your emails, playretroshow@gmail.com, playretroshow on Twitter. And of course, all the details are at frogpants.com/playretro. That'll do it for us. Hey, Brian, is there anything else you'd like to say about this world we're in or what we're doing here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, maybe not much this weekend, but next Monday, I am going to be at home off from work, and I'm going to be playing the crap out of some Barbies. So twitch.tv,
of Brian
Dunaway, check it out.
What did you do on your Christmas vacation? I played Barbie all day.
I played the crap out of some Barbie. I want to find out if dudes made the Barbie games and if they were in tune with the ladies, or if it was a combined event. Did Mattel step in and make any kind of bullshit moves? I want to know too.
All right, we'll talk all about that next week. That's it, everybody. Go have a great Christmas. We'll see you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.
Some things are just better to do with other people.
Jeez.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.